Hudson is an associate professor at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign School of Social Work. He has 20 years of professional and research experience with community-based organizations that provide mental health, primary care, and community development services. His research focuses on rural and semi-rural settings, minority populations, and has mixed methods. He uses mixed methods.
This is a very different piece for me. I spend a lot of time in the field. I consider myself a field researcher, and ultimately I spend a lot of time collecting quantitative data. You know, I do mixed methods, but I spend a lot of time collecting quantitative data to model on multi-level. And I know Region 5 in Georgia inside and out. I've spent many times on the road in that part of the world at community mental health centers. I probably know the three you're working with. But this was, because I do spend a lot of time with clients and a lot of time with staff and a lot of time with people in rural areas talking to them about how they're doing, we started to pick up some things that might be different. My disclosure statement, there was a little bit of funding here. We don't have anything else to disclose, I don't think. Why don't you turn down the lights? Because this is not a real intensive. You can turn down the lights, the pictures will. Images really have power, don't they? And anybody that's in mental health and has seen, right, what flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Over 50.
Right, and over 50. I'm not quite there yet. Don't push me over the edge. My wife take me away. But instantaneously, right, that draws meaning. If you know this movie and you know what this is, it draws meaning. Photography really has been routinely used since about the mid-1800s in mental health. And, you know, oftentimes the intention is very good here. But really what ends up happening is pretty voyeuristic and tends to portray people with mental illness in their settings in a pretty negative way. Okay, I think unintentionally, but, you know, it's a double-edged sword. And so it started first in Paris, France, and at a large hospital. And what they wanted to do was to document, you know, in the 1800s with the growth of the hospital system, was the first time that doctors could see large groups of people with serious mental illness in one setting. And so one of the things that they first started to do was, like, let's try to differentiate the beginning of the DSM, right? And so really by doing this, one of the things that they did was let's take photographs. I mean, the feeling that mental illness was really going to be physically recognizable on people, like some physical illnesses, was very strong. And so there's hundreds of photos from this hospital documenting different kinds of mental illnesses. And these are just some of them. Okay. This really doesn't stop, you know, right? When you get into the 60s, when you see One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, this is really based upon some really powerful work that started with conscientious objectors who were serving in mental health hospitals during World War II and saw absolutely appalling conditions where they started to take photos, and when you place those photos out in the public, they looked the same as a lot of the photos coming back from concentration camps with the absence of death. So these were equally fairly powerful. This is a classic with nurses restraining somebody. You can see the staff member over in the far left corner looking fairly disinterested. Classic, lots of photos of people that really make them seem very unusual. It continues on today around the world. Those photos that came out of the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s in the United States are iconic around the world. And they drive the art form continuing. And this is seen, these are photos that are taken, you know, during 2000s, most of them. And you'll see a lot of familiarity. Anonymity, very unusual, right? It's not just photography and movies and other things that sort of have an overview of the mental health system that's not very positive, right? We've had two Surgeon General reports. We've had the New Freedom Commission, all of which really concluded that the system's not a hell of a lot better than 1940, right? Okay? We, and again, I spend a lot of time out in the community. We had a fairly large NIMH grant to do some modeling around outcomes and disparities in outcomes in rural settings, and I had to go collect all the data. Well, we embarked on this in 2007 with this very heavy zeitgeist of it's not going to be good. All right. And really, after spending 3 years out there, surprisingly, not really the case. In rural settings, and particularly in rural Georgia, you know, I remember things are more positive than one might think. And really what we found was something that contrasted very much from those stark photos. Now, these casual observations over about 3 years really led to, all right, let's see if we can identify. Are we actually seeing things that our people are presenting to us, or is this real? So we collect lots of data on people. And so we went back and started to crunch through data looking for people who had very positive outcomes. And sure enough, we found lots of them. Long-term positive outcomes, positive relationships. And we started to identify some of these people and then called them up and said, would you like to do an interview with your favorite staff person? Identify your favorite staff person. We'd like to come in and talk to you about your successes. And we figured about 25 was plenty, and it was at the end of the day. We did all 25 interviews. We didn't stop. We've had some other things where we've stopped earlier just because we had reached a point where things were pretty repetitive. The goal was really to learn more about the relationships. Now, you know, it's a qualitative piece where we did narratives, and I spent about 2 hours talking to clients and their staff members. But we also felt like, let's add some photography. And the reason being is that oftentimes, as we've seen, photography is used to sort of highlight a neglected or forgotten part of mental health care. And this seems to me as a forgotten and neglected part of mental health care, that people actually have success in community-based settings. And we decided to use portraiture also in a sense because a lot of times as you look back at the photos that I show, there's a lot of anonymity. And these are human beings. They're people, and really oftentimes when they're portrayed anonymously like that, we take away a little bit of their humanity. And I understand the reason for that. Some people don't want to be photographed in those terrible situations, right? But it does have a downside to it. All right, and we do think it's a very revealing style. So who are these guys? You know, the staff were generally people who have been around for about 6 years, 4 years at their own location. They're about four. The staff and the clients in community-based settings are about the same age. We're all about 45. don't you feel 45? You know, it's a large percentage of female clients. You know, about 60% had graduated from. Oh, I'm 60% of this group, the staff, had graduate degrees here. And you can see very few of them had high levels of burnout, about 12%. You know, most people, about 52%, were thinking, boy, you know, I get a lot out of this job on a day-to-day basis, even though, let me tell you, in rural Illinois or in rural Georgia, these people get paid nothing. There's no retirement. There's no health care. It is possibly, in social work, it is the worst possible job to get. You're better off going to child welfare. Yeah, it kills me. It hurts. You're every other place I have to explain to students, they look at me, how much are you going to make? And I'm like, it's going to be bad. Are you ready for poverty? All right, clients have been in service about 7.5 years, all right, and about 56% are diagnosed with schizophrenia and 32% with a major mood disorder and 8% bipolar. These guys are all, you know, about 90% of people in community-based settings now have serious mental illness. Under sort of funding and policy mandates, that's what those agencies now do. You can see they received about 88% of them are Medicaid or Medicare eligible, or have Medicaid, Medicare. All of them were, and 88% are considered disabled. And we have about 20 hours of services over 90 days, and about 76%, not unsurprisingly, a large percentage of them received medication of some sort for their mental illness, right? And most were very positive on a 1 to 5 scale, with 1 being the absolutely most satisfied you can possibly be with the services. They were scoring about a 1.16. This is on the federal satisfaction scale. Satisfaction scales, as we all know, are not great measures, okay? Generally, this was a pretty high ranking for even when you compare to the national sample. When we looked at their basis scores, which is a measure of functioning and symptomology, which was the basis for our other research and analysis, you can see they have very stable scores. It's a 0 to 4 scale. Anything over a 1 is considered clinically significant. You really want to see people in the community ranging about a 1, 1.5. Anything over a 2, 2.5, all of a sudden you ought to be maybe hospitalized. So these guys are doing really well. They're where they need to be, is essentially with those scores. And these were some of the photos that we started to take. And you can see by the quotes, you know, I know somebody respects me just as much as I respect them. We treat each other more like family. There's no doubt in my mind that I know I care about them. You know, the smiles were genuine. It wasn't hard to get people laughing and talking and being very engaged. He always shows up at the right time. When I need somebody to talk to, or I need someone, an outside influence, like someone or a staff, not just a friend and stuff, supports me a lot in what I do. I really like this staff member's quote. You've got to understand the problem and understand where they're coming from, and I think that's what this profession is about. If you don't listen and borrow and beg ideas from the consumers, then you're never going to understand where they're coming from because you're not on the other side of the seat. That's a pretty powerful, these are really indications of very strong relationships. And remember, these are people that have been in services about 7.5 years at these particular agencies. This staff member was particular. It almost seemed disingenuous that she was this enthusiastic. I was with her for 2 hours. She was. For me, it's almost like going to Thanksgiving dinner or something because your family is there. Everybody's in the house and you're so excited to see everybody. It's been 2 years and I still feel that exact same way when I walk in the door. And again, I spent 2 hours with this person. Let me tell you, I'm sarcastic, skeptical. So when this came out, I had a lot of questions that followed up. And it was very clear that she was this engaged. And it was not unusual. This patient was great. I've got friends around me, people helping me out, people that care about me and love me. It's about a staff member. And this is sitting in the day treatment room. All right. The narratives really do come across with themes of mutual respect and equality and support across life that's mutual. And really they do. The staff, it is not a top-down process for a lot of these dyads. And the portraits really capture some groups that really seem to get along with each other. They laugh at each other. They poke fun at each other. They're no different than a lot of other people that you know as friends. And for people with serious mental illness, unfortunately, staff may be some of their best friends. We're not the only people who have done this. In the 1850s, one other person tried. Okay? And, think about all those other photos I show you and think about how powerful that portrait is and how positive that seems. Okay? And I just sort of conclude with how individuals with a mental illness are portrayed has a significant impact upon public perceptions. It really does. And maybe it's time we give a little bit louder voice to their many strengths.